By the way, we didn't talk about this, but when you came on board in 72, that was still within the not too many years after, I mean, the first female inspector came to FDA.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was it still kind of a rarity, or did you see a larger group of female CSOs by this time, by the time you came on board in 72?
We had a bunch that came in with me. When I think back on those that came in, if I'm very bad with numbers, I would say that probably half survived, as in they lasted more than a few years before they decided that there were other things they'd rather do with their lives. I would say that the mentality was still very much male, very much male. My supervisor, my first supervisor, who I love dearly, to this, you know, I had discussions with him about the fact that he wouldn't send me to a certain part of New York because I was a woman traveling alone. And of course, you know, I looked at that as if it was, you know, career limiting. You know, I expected to do everything that everybody else did. And ultimately, he said to me, "You look too much like my daughter. I would never send you to places like that."
Well, he was probably thinking they were dangerous areas.
Oh, yeah. But still, you know, my thought process was that I should go everywhere the men went.
Mm-hmm.
And I pushed to do all those things because that's what I didn't think I should be treated any differently.
Mm-hmm.
But there were, I think when I started, I'm trying to think, there were maybe four or five women investigators in New York. Only two of which came on as investigators. Two or three of them transferred, moved over from the laboratory into investigations when Project Tire happened. So that's what was there when I was there. And then there were a number of us that came in as Project Tire.
Imogene, mm-hmm. I can't remember her last name. She started, I think she started in New York. I might be wrong. She wasn't around.
No, okay. She wasn't around when I was there. The most outspoken women in New York at the time I were there were the ladies who'd come from the laboratory and our consumer affairs officers. Really had, because back in those days, the CAOs actually dealt with the field CAOs dealt with major media. There wasn't if there was an office here at headquarters, it wasn't as, didn't play as large a role in that as it has come to now in today's environment.
More decentralized at that time.
Yeah, you know, they were interviewed by, you know, the 7 o'clock news people, you know, personally interviewed. So they were forces to be reckoned with, you know. And so you can see, you know, over time as that role has changed, you know, those people who've been around for a long time really felt they lost a lot. Yeah, there weren't that many women around. I was head of the Federal Women's Program for a period of time, which was very small and very poorly supported in those days. but yeah, it was, when I look back at those days, it was very interesting because it was entirely different than it ultimately became when I retired.
You mentioned one of the earlier first cases you, the Bon Vivant case.
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of, you, when you came in, I think we were kind of on the tail end of that,
mm-hmm.
but maybe in the middle of the follow-up,
mm-hmm.
the investigation,
yes.
prosecution, and so on. I wonder if you could say a little bit about that and the impact it had from your standpoint on, you know, the office, the agency, and sort of the way we deal with food regulation, because it certainly attracted a great deal of attention in the media,
mm-hmm.
newspapers, and so on. You mentioned, in fact, that you accompanied the son of the man who died to the
mm-hmm.
trial.
I drove him. I was his driver.
It must have been an interesting experience.
It was, but it was an interesting experience, but it was certainly an unfortunate experience to start out with because of how we got to that particular situation. But I was not permitted to speak to him about any component of the investigation or the trial. We all got, all of us who drove, and there were a number of us who did, were given strict and very stern lectures from Alvin Gottlieb, who was infamous in the days of FDA, about what we could say and what we couldn't say. And it was the first time I was in a federal court on behalf of the agency, although I said nothing. We all were instructed to sit separately. We had certain, you know, cross your knees, don't look at anybody, look straight ahead. I was scared to death. I thought that judge was going to pick me out and kick me out of the courtroom. But it was a defining moment for me. You know, I really wanted to be a compliance officer after that. That was one of the things that I really thought was bringing everything together to bring the bad guys to trial. But at the time of Bon Vivant, Brooklyn District was located in the nastiest bunch of warehouse buildings that could ever be in existence down there. They were unbelievably horrible. And the entire, I want to say it was the sixth floor, was filled with cans of Vichy Suave soup. And then that, of course, caused the agency to focus dramatically on the safety of canned foods. And that spun out into all of the recalls of mushrooms, canned mushrooms throughout the Pennsylvania region. So we just added to the stash of Vichy Suave soup all of these mushrooms, and the cans exploded. Many of them were under processed. So it was I only went onto the sixth floor a couple of times and was grateful for the fact that I wasn't responsible for ultimately cleaning up what was, I think, a horrible mess. But that's all we did for months. You know, for months and months and months, with those kinds of recall effectiveness follow-ups. And I mean, it changed the way the agency did business dramatically from a food perspective. It was hard for us to say what life was like since we came in then. And I worked unbelievable numbers of overtime hours. I mean, you know, I worked, some weeks I worked as many as 80 hours a week, you know, doing that kind of work. Had paychecks that I got real used to and then didn't have them anymore. but, you know, if you looked at the group that came in comparison to the folks that we get now as new hires, since I was so involved with the new hire course, these were almost all, I can't think of a one that wasn't a recent college graduate. So most of us didn't have families, you know, most of us were single. So when it came to working 80-hour weeks, nobody thought twice about it. We just did it. And it was wasn't what I expected, but they did spend quite a bit of time explaining to us when we were hired that, you know, we were a 24/7 operation if there was a national emergency that involved products we regulated. So we were expected to be there, and we weren't.
You know, I